This is another episode of Stand Up Comedy, your host and MC, celebrating 40 plus years on the fringe of show business. Stories, interviews, and comedy sets from the famous and not so famous. Here's your host and MC, Scott Edwards.
Hi, and welcome to this week's show. Before we get started with a great interview and set from a terrific comedian, I just want to remind everybody, if you have any comments or requests, you can reach me at laughshistory@gmail.com. That's L-A-U-G-H-S, history@gmail.com. All right, let's get ready for a great show. Ladies and gentlemen, a very, very special day for the podcast. We have on the line one of the funniest comedians in the business. She was a regular at Laughs Unlimited for a few years, but she's been so busy. We'll talk about that. But let's make her feel welcome. Ladies and gentlemen, our star for the day, Kathy Ladman.
Yay!
Oh, the crowd goes nuts. Yes, we're so excited to have you on the podcast. Thanks so much for doing this.
I'm so happy. Oh, absolutely my pleasure.
So just to let everybody know, Kathy Ladman was a star performer, still is a star headliner on the comedy stages and has been for several decades. And back in the late 80s, and I don't know the exact date, and into the early 90s, we were lucky enough to have her at the club several times. And then fame took her away from us, as she is a very successful actress and entertainer. And we'll get into that for a little bit. But it has been about 30 years since we've seen each other, and you sound amazing.
Oh, my God. It's been 30 years?
Well, if I'm doing the math right, pretty close.
Oh, my God. Well, I think you're right. Maybe a little less than Paul. I think you're right.
It's a little bit less. It's probably 27, 28 years. But, you know, it's amazing.
Disgusting.
I saw you on Facebook the other day, and I've been doing some research, and you look amazing. You got to be, what, 50 now? You look great.
I'll be 65 tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Happy birthday. Tomorrow. Wow, what
Thank
great
you.
Timing. I can't believe 65,
Medicare.
Though. Yeah, Medicare.
I know, I can't either.
Come and get me Medicare, right?
Yes. I can't believe it. And then I was driving home tonight, and I saw this like place which is for like home assistance for seniors. And it's like, oh my God, I am definitely a senior now. I mean, there were some places that consider you a senior after 60 or 62, but now I am absolutely.
We can't lie about it anymore.
No, I mean I never lied anyway. But there's no. I mean, I can get into any movie theater for a senior price now.
Well, there are some advantages when it comes to restaurants and movie theaters. They take care of us old people. But you know what's amazing is, yeah, they got the senior discount menu or something.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
You know, I can't believe it. I went with my daughter. I went to Yosemite. I must have been there five, six years ago. And we were at this restaurant, and there was a children's menu and a senior menu, and it was for people over 60, over 55. And she and I both ordered off the same menu.
See, there's a benefit.
Sobering.
Did you have a good time at Yosemite?
Oh, my God. We had such a great time.
You would not know this, but my wife Jill works for the National Park Service, and her home park is Yosemite.
In fact, she was just for them.
She's an intelligence analyst, and she was just there yesterday, as a matter of fact. And we have already gone off track, which is fun, but we need to bring it back. So if you guys don't know, Kathy is originally, and you can tell in the voice, from New York City, right?
That's correct. Queens, New York.
Queens, New York. Born and raised?
Yes.
That's a whole different experience from the California life. How did you like growing up in New York? Was it unique or just you didn't know any different, so you loved it?
Well, I didn't know any different, and I love being a New Yorker. I love having grown up in New York. One thing that I will never No, however, is the thrill of seeing the Manhattan skyline for the first time, because I grew up with it and it just became part of the fabric of my life. But it's so amazing. Like when I go back to New York, which hasn't been since January now, you know, driving into the city from the airport, it's just so thrilling to see that skyline. And I love being a New Yorker.
It is a badge that a lot of people wear with honor. I recently saw a couple interviews of Jerry Seinfeld, who it was defending New York and saying that whatever the governor does, whatever the mayor does, New York will always be New York, and we're not going anywhere. And I thought that was, I mean, not only is he a proud New Yorker, but he's like fighting for it. I think that's impressive.
Yes, I think it's impressive too. Yeah.
Now, did you start your comedy career in New York, or did you? What got you into comedy?
Well, I wanted to. I always loved comedy from when I was like 8 years old. I used to listen to my parents' comedy albums, and I was very inspired by one particular album, Nichols and May Examine Doctors, and I decided consciously at about at age 13 that I wanted to be a stand-up comic.
Wow, that's early for that decision, yeah.
Yes, but then it took me really another almost 13 years to do it because I was afraid.
Well, it's a tough thing to get into, but once you do, there's the fear and the exhilaration that kind of not only forces you to get up there, but keeps you up there once you're there. So you didn't do your first, let's say, open mic until you were 26?
Well, I did an open mic when I was like 21, but then it didn't stay with me. Mm-hmm. I moved out to Los Angeles because I thought I would start it out here, and I lasted 4 months. I didn't go near a comedy club, and then it took me like another 4 years or so before I actually started in earnest. I started on June 28th, 1981.
Wow. Well, I should explain to the audience that I'm not aware of this because when you came to Laughs Unlimited, you were really already an established act. Do you remember your first time in Sacramento?
I can't remember my first time, but I can tell you I had my one and only standing ovation at Laughs Unlimited.
Well, we have great audiences here, and I'm not surprised.
Yes.
What does surprise me that was your one and only. I mean, you're a very, very funny lady.
Well, thank you. But who knows? Who knows? But that was a very thrilling experience for me.
Well, going back to your roots, so you started off kind of open mic here and there, and then a little bit of work in L.A. What club did you decide to make your home club? Was it the Improv, the Store? What did you kind of develop?
Well, at the time, I was living with Steve Middleman. He was my boyfriend,
Steve,
right? We were together for 3.5 years.
Oh, wow. He's a funny man, too.
He's very funny, and we're still very good friends. He had come out to L.A. It was at 1985, spring of 85. He wanted to come out for pilot season, and I decided to join him for a month, and he set up an audition for me at the Comedy Store, since that's where he was starting out in L.A., and I passed auditions at the Comedy Store. So that was my first club here. But then I started doing both the Improv and the Comedy Store, and I just did it quietly because there was this rivalry. And,
right.
I just think it's terrible to just tell comics that they can't work one club.
No.
I mean, it's just, you know.
Mitzi and Bud, they would go at it. But it was, in the long run, that competition may have actually improved the quality of stand-up comedy at the time, but it was also difficult for the entertainers. Like you said, you wanted to work both rooms, and there were others in the area, and you at the same time you didn't want to piss off Mitzi. Mitzi was the most on edge, I think, but there was a lot of clubs, and you just wanted to make
too.
Sure. Yeah, but was he?
Bud was too. I remember one time Bud was. Excuse me, I was working, I used to work in Vegas at the Comedy Store at the Dunes Hotel, and I never worked the Improv in Vegas. At the time, the Improv in Vegas was at the Riviera, and you had to do 21 shows a week, three shows a night, every single night.
Wow.
There were short shows, but it's like crazy. And one time I was working for Bud in Atlantic City, and he was there, and we were talking, and he said, yes, so you work the other room. And he was kind of doing a dig at me. And I said, hey, Bud, I'm just trying to make a living. You know, I don't think they should use performers to get back at each other like that.
No.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just agreeing with you that, for example, to bring it to me, Laughs Unlimited was the only club in this part of the state for a few years, and I kind of established myself. But then John Fox opened up the Punchline about, I'd say 20 minutes, 30 minutes away from my club. And it's both clubs are still operating. But I took a different approach. Instead of competing, I would call up the booker and say, look, this is who I have coming in. I want to make sure we don't step on each other's dates. And we actually worked cooperatively to make sure.
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah, we wanted to make sure that if Slayton was working over there, I wasn't going to bring him in early and try to kill their excitement for the act. And we never had a combative situation, but I'm sure that's somewhat unique.
Yeah, and I mean, look, when you start to work clubs like in Vegas or those kind of cities, they would say that you couldn't work another room and it was a certain period of time. It was like a 3-month period of time or something, and that's understandable because they didn't want you to dilute the business from the week that you had at their club. You know, they just wanted to keep it kind of separate, and that's understandable.
Yeah, and that's what we did, a 2 or 3 month break between acts, and we were able to share acts like Will Durst and Bobby Slayton using that kind of format. But it was also interesting that each club kind of had its own pool of entertainers. There were people that worked for me that never worked for the Punchline and vice versa. So it goes a lot of different ways. But you got a good start at the store. Mitzi is certainly somebody that can make a star out of somebody. I know that you went on to do a lot of TV, and I'm still jumping ahead because really when we started booking you, you were already, and this is only 4 or 5 years after this work at the Comedy Store, so you were already an established headliner. I don't remember featuring you. I think you came in as a headliner.
I started headlining, I mean, look, this was the 80s, so you could really move up if you had, you know, the
time
goods,
and the material, right?
You could move up pretty quickly because there were so many places to work. I first headlined in Canada. It was my very first headlining gig in Winnipeg, and I actually got a nice bit out of that, about my centerpiece Canadian bit. I got from that gig. That was 1986. And that was scary. I remember that first time. I'm like, God, I was going to have to like be on stage for 45 minutes. And then I just started headlining around the country. And, you know, I mean, I mean, it's been ages since I've had that kind of stage time that I used to get when I was working the road.
Yeah, it
is. I was doing 20 to 25 shows a month.
Yeah, and it is different. And once you reach a certain level as an entertainer, when you're on the road, which is a different beast from television and other things, you have you know, a qualified headliner should be doing 45 minutes minimum, except for Denny Johnston, who I did 37 minutes and 50 seconds every night. but I mean, most headliners, and then some would, you know, we had Jay Leno do an hour and a half and Dana Carvey do an hour 10, you know, it just depends. Right. But it is true that when you get to showcase clubs like the Store, the Improv, where there's so many acts, it was a big deal to get a 20-minute set. I mean, other than Robin Williams, I don't know anybody that could go up on stage and do as much time as they wanted ever.
No, not in town. But when I used to open for Jay in the, I guess it was the mid-80s, I would open for Jay and on the road. and which were great gigs because his audiences were fantastic. And he initially, he was doing 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Wow.
Which was insane. And then he cut it back to an hour and a half.
Yeah, he is just a comedy machine when it comes to stand-up. In fact, yes. He still loves getting out and doing long sets, and he has the material for it. And I can totally understand that you enjoyed opening for him because, like Jay, you're a very talented monologist, but clean as well. And yes. I think the two of you would be a terrific team on stage.
Kind of a copacetic relationship.
That's a better term, complementary to each other.
Yes. Not that we would pay each other compliments, a different kind of complimentary. Although we did pay each other compliments. But I remember this one time I was opening for Jay south of Chicago, and it was like Labor Day weekend or something, and there was such horrible traffic. I was stuck in traffic. I ended up getting to the theater like 15 minutes or 20 minutes before I was supposed to get on stage. And I was grimy from traveling. And I had a shower in my dressing room and I opened the shower curtain. I'm in a towel and I'm getting ready and I open the shower curtain and there's like no handle to turn on the water. And it was just like a pipe stem sticking out. And I'm like going around backstage saying, does anyone have a needle nose fire? And of course nobody had anything. And so I ended up just going on stage like dirty and just putting on my stage clothes. And I had one of the best shows I ever had because my defenses were so down. I just, not everything was going my way and I just had a roll with it. And it was just such a great audience. My God.
Well, and I think that goes to the art form of comedy is that a lot of times it is affected by the atmosphere or the situation that's going on, and how you use that really makes or breaks your comedy show. And it sounds like in this situation, going through all that anxiety and stress just to get to the stage, that when you got to the stage, you went, okay, here we go,
Yes, I know how to do this.
Oh, that's so great. We were really lucky to have you work for us. As I said several times, it was 89, 90 and into about 92 or 3. Then you just took off with acting, which I want to ask you about. But before we get to that, the times that you were at Laughs Unlimited, I don't know what you recall. I got to tell you that you were one of the favorites for my staff. I know that Jill and Lynn said that you guys all went to a movie together and saw Sister Act, and they used to sit and wait for certain bits on your set. Jill particularly remembers you having kind of a mockery bit about you unfolding a roadmap. By the way, anybody?
Oh yes, my father. It had to do with the way to torture my father. you would fold a roadmap in front of him. You would fold a roadmap incorrectly. And it's so funny that you bring that up because I'll tell you about this if we get to this, that I'm in the middle of rehearsing a solo show that I'm going to be doing, supposed to be doing actually now in New York, that I actually tell that bit in the show because I'm talking about my father in the show. And I use that to illustrate what he's like.
Well, your material.
That's one of my favorites.
Yeah, your material, though, came from you. It wasn't like Seinfeld's very observational. His comments, his comedy comes from everyday stuff. But then there's other entertainers, and you fall into this category where you're taking life's experiences. You took a situation where, by the way, those of you that are under 30, a paper map was something you had to fold and unfold to see where you're going. Before GPS. And it was a nightmare to try to refold those, but to do it just to torture your father. Also, I guess he was had some patience problem with the microwave.
Yes, that's right. He was an accountant. He was very anal retentive, as I say in that bit. And he would stand in front of a microwave and go, "Come on, it's been 10 seconds. I don't have all minutes."
You know, it's so funny because these technologies, which everybody, you know, everybody listening to this podcast thinks of, well, we've had microwaves and GPS forever. But if you go back enough years, there were no, you know, it was paper maps and no microwaves. And when they came along, it was a big deal, right?
I remember having to pull over to check a map for directions, you know.
Yeah,
it was a very different. I mean, I was talking to my husband about like having my first cell phone, and I had 20 minutes a month. That was my plan.
20 minutes
a month, and it was so expensive. Oh. It was so expensive. And then when I would get, you know, if I had to be on the phone, it was like, oh, come on, hurry up, hurry up. You gotta give up the phone. I don't have enough time.
Well, you want to hear crazy? I had the club when cell phones came out, and I actually had a phone installed in my car. And this was before cell phones were cell phones. It was a Motorola actual phone. You'd open up the glove box, and there would be like a handle phone. It was the most expensive thing, and the unit took up most of my trunk.
I'm sure.
But it was fun.
I don't know if you remember this, but you remember the size of those huge, huge phones that they used to have? Oh, this is one movie, and I can't even remember.
Oh no! But they were actually bigger than the handle on the old style dial phone.
Oh,
they were huge.
I mean, it was like the size of a brick. I mean, it was really huge.
Yeah, well, that was anybody under 40 probably wouldn't remember those. But
we're gonna get a lot of these. Yeah, there's gonna be a lot of these.
Since we're both celebrating 65 and your birthday tomorrow, we got to talk about this stuff. So one other thing that was brought up by the girls, and I want to apologize. I remember you being a very funny act and loved working with you, but I don't have the memory of particular bits. Lynn commented.
Don't worry about it.
Lynn commented that you used to do an amazing impression of Rhoda Morgenstern. Yeah, she said that you did a bit from the Mary Tyler Moore Show of Rhoda, and you would do a short impression that she still remembers.
I don't remember doing that at all. Hey, Nia. Hey, Naya, that's all I could think of. I don't remember that. Remember doing that.
We'll have to see if we can dig up a copy in the archives. But that's funny that the individual bits that people remember that from comics that came through the clubs. Now, going on memory, do you remember working with anybody fun or doing anything special while at Laughs Unlimited?
I'm so glad you brought that up because my favorite person to work with was my dear, dear friend, Dave Anderson, who's no longer with us.
Wonderful man.
I loved Dave so much. Oh my God. And I remember one time, the last night of one week when we worked there playing Pictionary, and we all were laughing so hard. I had never played it before, and it was so fun. And oh God, wasn't he the best?
Oh, he was amazing. Not only a funny guy on stage, but just a terrific man off stage. We used to do a lot of away from the club activities with Dave. And we were all sorry to lose him, but we have the memories, and that's what's important. And he was a great guy, but I'm glad that you remember working with him and playing Pictionary at our club. That's great.
Oh, I remember. I mean, when I think of Laughs Unlimited, I think of Dave.
Yeah, well, that's a good way to go.
Yeah. And do you remember anybody else I worked with there?
Well, because you were a headliner, we would mix up the featured and opening acts. Some of the guys I've interviewed started off as opening acts or middle acts, and so they got a chance to work with stars, future stars. You were already a star. But let's take it to the next level, because what was interesting and different than some of the other people I've had a chance to interview is you were a really talented and successful road comic, which is tough for anybody, but especially a comedian. And I know that the whole male-female thing people can get riled up about, but being a female headliner and being on the road is got to be one of the toughest jobs, and you were able to quickly get away from that. And you've done something like 11 movies?
Oh God, I have.
Well, that's what that's what they say. You've made appearances in about 11 movies. So you went into acting.
Oh,
and
wow!
What I was going to ask is, how did you transition from being a top of the line comedian? And by the way, when I say top of the line, Kathy Ladman was female stand-up of the year in 1992. People, we're talking top of the line. You were a great entertainer, and getting the stand-up comedian of the year is no small feat. So congratulations.
Thank you so much. I mean, that was exciting. I remember that night too. Joan Rivers handed me my award. It was really exciting.
But it's good to get acknowledged.
Transition?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So how did I transition? Well, you know, it's interesting. I always wanted to try my hand at acting, but it was so much work for me to be had on the road that I didn't stay in town long enough to take advantage. And it used to be that there was a definite pilot season. I mean, this is back before there were so many different channels, you know, on TV.
And now they produce year-round, right?
Yeah, it's really year-round. I mean, there still is a pilot season, but that's just for network. And there is stuff that goes on year-round. But back in the 80s and the 90s season, there was a specific pilot season. And I started staying home like in 88, 89, and I started doing pretty well. And I got a pilot in 89. It didn't go anywhere. And I did a few different pilots that didn't go anywhere. But that's the name of the game. And the first pilot that I did was a terrible, terrible script. And I was in it with George Clooney.
Wow.
He was another one of the series regulars. And other people that I'm still friends, Stephen Tobolowsky, who's a very successful character actor that I'm sure if you saw his face, you would know him.
And you
from
go, oh, him, right.
Tons of films. You know who he was? He was in Groundhog Day. He was the guy, Ned.
Oh, right. I know him. And he's done a lot of movies.
Yes, tons of movies.
And TV shows.
And TV shows as well. Yeah. So he and I are still friends. And this other woman, Phyllis Lyons, she and I are still friends. Dee Dee Rescher, she and I were in that together. So, I mean, that's a long time ago. And then in subsequent years, I got to do other pilots as well. And I just loved acting. It was really, really just
well, you seem
a
to
whole
take,
different skill
yeah,
set.
It seemed like you took to it naturally. One of my favorites was that you were in the movie My Fellow Americans. And
yes,
that's
that
one
great.
That not a movie that is considered, you know, probably not even the top 50 funny movies, but it's one of my favorites. But you did many walk-ons on many movies.
Yes.
I just think to be able to transition from the stand-up stage to television to movies must have been exciting.
It was one of the most thrilling things that I was able to experience was, you know, Mike Nichols and Elaine May were my heroes when I was growing up, and I got to do two Mike Nichols films.
Wow.
Which is amazing.
Yeah, it was that's
amazing.
Incredible.
And I even got to do a bit with him. I got to do one of his bits with him, you know, Elaine May, Mike Nichols bit with him while I was on the set of one of the movies, and it was like crazy exciting.
Oh, that is so cool. See, that's an experience nobody can top. So I kind of skipped over television, and I didn't mean to, but the movies are really exciting. But on TV, I mean, you were on an HBO special, you did like 9 Tonight shows. That's got to be near a record.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you.
No, nowhere near a record. There are people who've done 30, 40. You know.
Well, still, 9's pretty damn good, Kathy. You
it's
did
good.
Great.
It's good. It is good. It is good.
But you were also a regular on the Craig Ferguson show. Was curious what it was like working with him.
I always really loved him. I thought he was a real unique talent and could go off script easily, could really speak from his heart and from the top of his mind. And I was always very impressed with him. And one of the most exciting things that I did on his show was, in fact, it was, don't know if it was the last, maybe it was the last time I did his show, was I decided that I would, I've been developing this show that I'm finally in rehearsals for right now for years. I mean, I've been on and off with this show, and it's about my eating disorder. And I did a set on a show about being anorexic, and it was really an amazing, it was a life-changing experience to be able to talk about that on national television, and then to sit down and talk with him about addiction, because he's an alcoholic.
Right. So well, drugs really and alcohol. He did it all.
Talk about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the things I respect and like about Craig is that, and I've read his book. I don't know him personally, of course, but I've read his book and I've watched his shows. And I thought it was always interesting how he was a dual personality. And one minute he could be a total wackadoodle comic and it'd be as funny as anything. And the next minute he's sincere, he's serious. And for example, in his book, his love for this country and his patriotism, it's such an interesting balance for somebody that's on TV every night to have that in their back pocket, to be able to go both ways.
Right, right. It's true. Was his book called American on Purpose?
I have it.
Or am I think of...
It's on my bookcase about 20 feet from me, but I can't see it.
Oh, okay.
But it was a good book.
If you're, if you can't see it.
You want to get
65.
If you want to get, pick up his book. It's a really good read, and he's an interesting man. How many Ferguson shows did you do?
I think I did five, I think.
So nine tonight shows. Five Ferguson.
Peter Sally was his executive producer, and Peter was the producer on the Tonight Show. That's where I met Peter. And there were such great people working. I have to say I really miss those days of doing late night TV. I really do. And I never got to do Letterman, and I really regret that. I wish I had had that opportunity.
Well, you did a great job being on the Tonight Show and the Ferguson Show, especially if you were asked to do the Tonight Show. You were a part of the big anniversary show.
Yes, I got to do a couple of those. I was on a couple of those.
That's a real honor to be invited back for those, because they don't just pick anybody.
Yes, definitely. That was a huge honor. Huge honor.
Yeah, and well, you're funny. That makes a difference too.
It does make a difference.
I mean, you're a nice gal, but you're funny.
Oh, you know what I remember, which is so sobering to remember this. The first time I did the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, I went over to the couch after I did my set, and it must have been 1989, because he said to me, he asked me, he says, "You're very funny." He said, "How long have you been doing this?" And I said, 8 long years. I thought that was a long time back then.
Yeah, and really for somebody to...
And now it's been...
Right.
It's been 39 years now.
Oh, you've had an amazing career, but to realize that 8 years... Because the first 8, you know, the first 8 are the hard ones. After that, it gets easy.
No, it doesn't.
I know. I'm joking. Now, you did also a lot of walk-ons. I mean, Modern Family, several shows, crime shows, courtroom shows. You did a lot of TV work in and around the movies. So you ended up being a very busy actress in the sense of doing all these spots. Did you miss doing more stand-up, or did the stand-up really set you up for the TV shows? Did you enjoy those more?
I really like both, but I tell you, I got tired of doing the road, because, you know, I never made it to the point in my career where I was filling rooms, and that is hard after a while. You want to perform for people who want to come to see you. And I never got to that point, because I left the road and I was doing more acting at that point.
Right, right. And so, and I think that's kind of what happened with Laughs, because we always had full crowds. But we weren't, right. We didn't use you in any of the big concerts we did, not because you weren't funny, but because you did transition and you were spending more time in LA doing TV and movies. But I'm sure that the money you made and the fact that you didn't have to be on the road had a lot of benefits.
Oh, definitely. And then there's also, you know, if you made enough money in the union, then you got health insurance, which is a big deal. And as a comic doing the road, you didn't have any of that.
You didn't have that opportunity. That's really important, right. Especially as you get older and start having a family and kids and doing things, having the health insurance is important. So definitely. You've had this amazing career. Any funny stories or anything that stands out you'd like to share with our podcast audience? Am I throwing you under the bus here?
Put me on the spot. Well, I mean, as far as like something that did happen that was, I don't know if I was married to my husband at the time. Were we married at the time when we did Sacramento? I don't know if we were already married. I don't think we were. I was playing the other, not the original, not the Old Town room, the other room.
Citrus Heights,
that's right. And Tom and I, who was not my husband yet, were working there, and I was sick, and I had this really bad cough, and I didn't want to take any codeine before I went on stage because it would just make me not sharp. So I couldn't, at one point during my show, I couldn't stop coughing. I was about 20 minutes into my show, and I couldn't stop coughing.
Oh, jeez.
And it was like impossible for me to do it. So what happened was Tom came out, and he did my act for me since he knew it. All right. He's correcting me.
Husband.
He had to finish the bit that I was in the middle of doing. And then he went on and continued my act. And I would do the physical stuff, and he did all the words.
Oh, that's amazing.
The audience was so into it, and they just loved it. They just loved it. That was a special show, because that's kind of like, you can't plan anything like that.
No, and I would have been at the downtown club, so I didn't witness it, but that sounds like an amazing situation where, under duress, in a situation you can't control, you have a live audience, it goes to the old showbiz Adam, the show must go on, and here's somebody that knows your act. Well, I'll just do your act for you.
Right. And it was really, I literally couldn't put two words together without coughing.
Well, you tell Tom I appreciate it, and thank you very much. The show went on.
Scott says he appreciates it. Scott Edwards, I'm talking to.
So that's exciting. Yeah, well, that's a great story. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Sure.
Well, tell you what,
I can't think of any. Yes.
Oh, no, that's fine. We've learned a little bit more about you. Most importantly, I wanted to hear how comedy came to your life and how you were able to have such a successful career over almost 4 decades, not to age you. Like I said, you look amazing. Who would know?
No, it's fine.
But with...
I mean, I'm 65. It's not aging me. I still remain 65.
Well, you've had all those successful years live on stage. You're working on a new show that'll come out next year, live on stage. Is that going to still open in New York, you think, or L.A.?
It depends. I mean, if theaters are going to be opening, then I'm going to be doing it. Before I do it in New York, I probably would do it here, but it all depends. I'm supposed to do it in a festival.
Oh, okay. What's the name of the show, Kathy?
It's called Does This Show Make Me Look Fat?
That's the title? Does This Show Make Me Look Fat?
Yes.
That's a great title, especially if the subject's anorexia. That's hilarious.
Yes.
Oh,
thank you.
I think people will get that and laugh just seeing the title. Well, that's genius.
Yes, thank you so much. And, you know, the show is not all funny because it's a serious subject, but it's really genuine, authentic, from the heart stories about my life and how I got there and how I became, you know, entered recovery.
But I think what's going to make it warm is that with your personality and your creative writing talents, you're going to be able to come across on a serious subject in a fashion that makes it entertaining as well. You know, you're going to be able to mix.
Well, thank you, Scott.
Well, I just know you and I know your act. And speaking of that,
thank you.
No coughing allowed. I have queued up a terrific set that we're going to share of you from 1992. And we're going to let the audience hear your entertainment. But I wanted to say thanks for doing the podcast. Thanks for doing the interview. It's been terrific catching up. And again,
thank you. Same here.
And I'm sure the podcast audience enjoyed your stories and your history in a terrific art form like stand-up and comedy and being able to transition, which many people try and not many people succeed at, going from the stand-up stage to TV to movies and building the career you have, including, you know, Female Stand-Up Comic of the Year. I mean, you've had so many accolades, well-deserved, and we appreciate your years you worked at Laughs.
Thank you. Thank you, Scott. That's very sweet. It makes me feel great. Thanks a lot.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, here's coming up a really terrific comedy set from the star of our interview. Let's all hear it from Kathy Ladman. Thanks, Kathy, for doing the interview.
My pleasure. Thanks, Scott.
Oh, you're a great audience. Wow. Wee. Ooh, wow. Oh, you're great. Wow. Yeah, you're great. Wow, it's very nice audience. A lot of couples here tonight. It's nice. I'm real happy for you. I'm not married. Guess how old I am. Go ahead, guess. Hey, this is not an auction, okay? 35. 35. I'm 35. I'm not married. I give up. Really? I was just at my cousin's wedding. I caught the bouquet. I just took it home and repotted it. I'm getting old. Yeah, you know you're getting old when you're more attractive hanging upside down. Maybe one day I'll meet a nice bat. See, but we're all getting old together. That's the comforting thing. Everybody's getting old. My dad's getting old. He's 71. I can't believe it. He's still very handsome. But his eyebrows are going crazy. What are those guys and their eyebrows? Oh, he looks like a mad scientist. Here he goes to sleep. He wakes up. Ooh, Dad. Ooh, did you take a nap or did you invent something? And my mom's getting old. She's 68. She's so nervous. She gasps at everything. What's that? What's that? It's air, Mom. If you inhale slowly, it won't hurt you. She is nervous. You should see her drive a car. She's a menace to society. Oh, look out. I think we're moving. She's one of these really cautious drivers. She's too cautious. You know, when my mother's driving along a road and there's a sign that says the road curves to the left, she signals that way. Just to let us know she's going there. Not into the brick wall ahead of her. So then my father yells at her, get away, let me get behind the wheel. Oh God, my father drives so slowly. You know, when deer see my father's car approaching, they linger. Once a cop stopped my father. He said, so you know how fast you were going? 3 miles an hour. Oh, I'm sorry, officer. I guess I was a little anxious. To do what? Simulate time-lapse photography? And they can sleep at night. These people can sleep at night. I can't believe it. I can't sleep. I have such insomnia and a nightmare last night. A terrible dream. I dreamt my parents came to visit me. That's it. Oh, God. Oh, God. My parents, they're like poltergeists. We're back! Let us in! I had to see them recently. I went back to New York. I was there for a family reunion. Ugh. I hate those things. You know, I walk in there, I look at everyone, I think, ugh, I'm getting my tubes tied. That's it. The tree ends here. It was my cousin's wedding. Now I'm not married. Like I told you, I'm not married. I tell you a lot, I'm not married. So it's my cousin's wedding. She hires the worst band in the Western Hemisphere. I mean, there are centuries and centuries of beautiful music. These guys have to play the Hokey Pokey. Oh my God. I believe it's the Hokey Pokey. Do you know the song? You put your right foot in, you put your right foot out. Gee, what a haunting melody. You put your right foot in and you shake it all about. You do the hokey pokey and you turn yourself around. That's what it's all about. I mean, can you imagine if that's what it was really all about? You die, you go to heaven, you check in. You mean it was just a hokey pokey the whole time? I mean, all I had to do was this. I could have called in sick. So everybody's there at this wedding. My mother's there. A typical Jewish mother. Really, one time my mother was on jury duty. They sent her home. She insisted she was guilty. Jewish either, because all religions are the same. I mean, religion is basically guilt with different holidays. Yeah. Oh, I feel so guilty. Well, let's eat. I love food. You know what my favorite food is? Pez. Candy Pez, you know? Those little cartoon characters with tracheotomies. Is that advertising candy out of the neck? Isn't that nice? So anyway, so my mother's there. You know, my mother has to talk to me like every damn second. I don't know why. You know, my mother has this way of talking sometimes when she wants to be inconspicuous. You know, she doesn't want anyone around us to hear her.
Talks out of the side of her mouth. Thinks nobody notices her. She goes, girls, there's a man following us, there's a man following us.
Gee, I hope he's a speech therapist. And my dad is a CPA, and like every CPA I know, he's the most fastidious, meticulous, anal retentive person. He is so impatient. You know, my father's the kind of guy who stands in front of a microwave and goes, come on! It's been 10 seconds. I don't have all minutes. Really, if you ever meet my dad and you want to torture him, and you will, this is what you do. You tie him up against the wall like this with his arms and his legs like this. Make him stare straight ahead. And then right in front of him, you refold a roadmap incorrectly. He just switches a little bit and then he passes out. It's fun to watch, it is. Oh, he's got big problems. The man is insane. He's old. When I was a teenager, he was so grouchy and cheap. You know, he used to come home from work. I'm a troll. Give me that junk mail. They all want money from me. I hate him. Hey! Every light in this house is burning. Don't give me that. It's nighttime excuse. You can fit like other families. Hey, you get off the phone. The phone was always the worst thing. You know, my parents had the same phone for 30 years. That big black rotary desk phone. Cavemen won't even use this phone. And it's so heavy you can't even lift the receiver to your head. You gotta lean down into the table. And that dial is so stiff you need a special instrument to dial. By the 7th digit, I always misdial. Oh! I don't want to speak to anybody ever again. God, I was 13 years old. That phone was my only link with humanity. Oh, I needed to speak to a friend. I would just sneak over to that phone. Oh. My father's already standing behind me like a vulture. Keep it brave. Keep it brave. Keep it brave. And our phone bills could not have been more minuscule. I swear, if Alexander Graham Bell had seen our phone bill, he would have said, there's no money in this.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, Kathy Ladman live on stage. There's nothing like it. I'm sure you can see why she was picked the female stand-up comic of the year in 1992. And that set was from 1992, so relevant. And she's celebrating her birthday tomorrow. So wish her a birthday wish out there. And thanks for listening to this podcast. We know you had a good time. We'll see you next week with another new show. Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Stand Up Comedy, Your Host and MC. For information on the show, merchandise, and our sponsors, or to send comments to Scott, visit our website at www.standupyourhostandmc.com. Look for more episodes soon and enjoy the world of stand-up comedy. Visit a comedy showroom near you.